If your 17, 18 year old self had met Dermot and he put his arm around you and said all those things to you, would that have helped you?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah, so it's helping me now. Thanks, Dermot.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0, proud partner of Croke Park Stadium and proud partner of the GAA.
I was just chatting to you off air there about, you know, the commuting from Meath to Dublin for work, to Tyrone for Gaelic games. How many times have Dunboyne tried to twist your arm to try and get you to sign up to the Meath GAA cause?
There's been a couple of times, you know, a couple of times. Want to see you wearing a Gaelic top around the coffee shops, wherever they go, who's this here lad, you know?
Yeah.
So there's been a couple of times, but I can't go just yet.
How's the Athy Éireann season going?
It's going. We got through the league anyway. We weren't going our best this year, you know. We sort of finished top of the bottom, I guess, you know, and we're an intermediate for next year again, you know. But we do have championship now coming up in the next 2 weeks, so that's our next big focus.
You were saying that Martin is still lacing up the boots at the age of, he's well into his 40s now?
Yeah, he's 41 now, right. So he is, yeah, still playing. He says he was doing reserves, but got dragged into the seniors as well, so he is. So he's still got it.
Where are you playing and where is Martin playing when he comes off the bench?
Well, Martin actually plays for a different team. He transferred about 10, 12 years ago, so he did. So he plays for Carrickmore.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise.
Yeah, yeah. So once he got married and had kids and playing for Tyrone at the time, it was just sort of something I had to give, you know.
Okay.
And it was just more convenient for him to focus on his family, I guess.
Fair enough.
You know, but for me, it's normally wing half back, around defence, could be full back, corner back, anywhere around there, you know.
How many Penroses in the Athy Éireann team?
There's two of us at the minute. Yeah. Me and my younger brother, we play together, so we do. He's wing half forward, and then I'll be down below him, wing half back normally.
Right.
You know, so it's long the one side.
And then who's first up in championship?
Moy.
Moy, okay, right.
It's a big game.
Were they senior for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were for a while. You know, so and they beat us in the league as well, so we're out for a bit of revenge now, you know.
Yeah.
But it won't be easy with everything, you know. Championship just seems to be a completely different ball game altogether. And just depends on the day, but hopefully we're fit for it.
Is Athy Éireann Conor Bradley's club?
Yes.
Right.
They are, yeah.
Did you get to see much of him as a GAA player?
Not much. I've seen a few games with him, you know, and just unbelievable. Even from like a young age, you could see so much potential there, you know. And what he's done now today with Liverpool is just unbelievable. Like, it's so unheard of, I guess, but it's great at the same time to see someone from a rural background can get to that point, especially within soccer, you know.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Because we often think about the loss that he is to the Republic of Ireland, but we don't consider what a loss he would have been to Tyrone GAA.
This is it,
he was unbelievable at the GAA, was he?
Unbelievable as well.
Where did he play?
I think he was forward.
Was he forward, yeah. Is he?
A lot younger, so like if we had him now, he'd be a great addition to our senior team, you know, but you know, it's just one of those things. He had to go where his dreams took him, you know?
Yeah, he's doing all right, I think it's fair to say. I'm keen to establish the background in Athy Éireann at the start of this conversation. So you're in a family of four boys. It is a heavy, heavy GAA background, I suspect. I presume it's the most important thing in terms of your family and your upbringing.
Yeah, 100%. Like the same with anyone, any family. You're just born into the GAA, I guess, you know. We were there from the football pitch from maybe 5, 6 years old. My father was a GAA coach and a player as well, so he's been there all his life, I guess, you know. And then we were brought along for training sessions, and then once we could play, we could join then, you know. And then with Martin as well, doing the ranks the whole way up and going on to play for Tyrone, like, it's always been there. We've always been around it. And yeah, my sort of career started from 5, 6 years old up until, I guess, just 18, 19 year old sort of thing, you know. And then there's a lot of time then after that where I started dipping in and out and then gave it up altogether. And then went back 3 years ago now, so it's a full circle moment. So it is, but yeah, coming from a rural background, you're sort of, it's all you know, essentially. There's nothing else.
Especially when there's success, and you're seeing your older brother win All-Irelands. That must be a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, like, think about, like, I was really young at the time as well, but it's like one of my first core memories of seeing someone in that spotlight, I guess, you know. And back then, the Tyrone team, they were idols and celebrities. So seeing them do so well, and especially Marty as well, come from where we come from, it's great to see, and it just shows his inspiration for the younger players coming through. And then we had Shane Swinney as well, and then Ron McNamee as well over the years, you know, coming into it. So it's good to see that he kept the tradition up for boys can go and play for Tyrone, you know.
Was your dad a baller?
He was a baller.
Was he? Did he play for Tyrone?
Didn't play for Tyrone. Right. He went for the over 4 days, I think he did at some stage, but that was about it, you know. But no, I played seniors and then reserves, and then him and Marty actually played together for the senior team. I think Martin was maybe 16 at the time, and Dad was still playing, so that there is pretty cool. They were sort of on the same team together.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that was one of Dad's last memories of playing for High Iron, I guess, you know, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's into coaching now. He's been coaching the ladies team in High Iron, and then he's gone to a different couple of different clubs around the area as well, you know, so he's still fully involved, and he likes to get involved, and we come back from football match and ask us how we get on, or why were we taking off, or why did we not take that shot, you know, right. So he still gets the grunt of it, I guess, you know, from any day dad, I guess, you know, but yeah, he still loves it.
You talk about, I guess, falling away from Gaelic games a little bit at the age of 18. This is as a result of maybe leaving Ireland for a while, getting away from it all. Can you talk us through this period in your life?
Yeah, so back then, like, I'm gay, and back then I didn't really know what it was. And 18, 19, it's an age where you're trying to figure yourself out anyway in terms of what you want to do in life, where you want to live and work and school, I guess, you know. And around this time, it's sort of what I was supposed to be doing was breaking into the senior team, I guess, you know, and sort of moving up in the ranks. But at the time, behind the scenes, I didn't really know why I wasn't achieving that, I guess, you know. And behind the scenes, not knowing how you're feeling and your sexuality at this point, but then walking into that environment where it's not really talked about. I guess nothing in GAA is talked about as openly as it is today, I guess, compared back then. Everyone's just there, go play football, keep the head down. You don't talk about your feelings, essentially. And it just became a place where I just didn't enjoy it, you know? And then the sort of a mix with, one, not me accepting my sexuality until 10 years after that, I guess, you know? And then two, just being around an environment where you would hear certain slurs and terms being thrown around the locker room, for example. You're sort of thinking, okay, I'm affected by that, and they didn't know why. And you sort of get the paranoia and get in your head a bit for you could know something about me that I don't even know about myself yet, sort of thing, you know? There's a lot of going into it and not being yourself, essentially. So I sort of associated Gaelic football with how I felt for being in the closet, not being openly gay, I guess, you know? And it was just sort of my own mind games. What's these people going to think? Am I going to come out here? Am I going to lose football? Am I going to lose my friends, my family? Am I going to get judged? Am I going to get targeted on the football pitch? Like, all these here sort of scenarios go around your mind.
At the age of 18?
Around the age of 18, yeah. So around there, you know. And at the time, like, I was lucky enough, as that time was going to university. So I sort of used travel and getting away to get away from that feeling, I guess, you know, but not knowing I'd be bringing all those feelings with me.
Where were you going to college?
I went to Liverpool.
Okay, so right. Does that tell a story as well?
So that sort of was my first insight. So it was like, okay, I'm going to get out of this environment now. Things will get better, I guess, you know. And at the time, I was like, okay, Liverpool, no one knows me. I don't know anyone there. I can sort of explore my sexuality or begin to explore it. But Liverpool being Liverpool, it's predominantly Irish people. And you fall back into the Gaelic football team and the university team, and the boys you're on that team are 20 minutes down the road from back home, you know, so even then you're still back into that environment to a sense, you know, so it sort of brought those feelings along with me and sort of had to put up that shield for another 3 or 4 years over there. But after that there, I spent a lot of time in America as well, like my summers, doing summer camps. So again, it's one of the things, right, I'm going to get away, get out of the country, go even further afield now, explore my sexuality where no one knows me at all. But you still have that fear of if you do, someone's going to find out and it's going to get back home, you know. So it didn't really, I wanted to explore it, but at the same time just had the fear and didn't really accept it. That's okay, I might just be gay, but I didn't want to give in to myself, just I guess just how we're brought up, you know, especially in a rural community. And it wasn't until COVID, whenever we're sort of, you had no choice but to sit with your thoughts, I guess, you know. And after that there, I booked a one-way ticket to Asia by myself, just on some solo traveling. At this point, I had explored my sexuality to an extent, but still wasn't out. And at this stage, I was 27, coming 28, and it just got to the point where traveling was my escape and what I love to do. And even falling into my career today, it was all about travel and adventure. And it got to the point where I couldn't even enjoy that anymore. And the love of it just wasn't there. And it just burnt out, to be honest. And the feelings of, okay, I need to come out now, or am I going to come out, was getting stronger and stronger. And I couldn't really focus on anything else, you know? And it got to the point where I was in the hotel room and it was tiny, tiny window and the rest was just darkness, I guess, you know. And I just think of that's how my mind felt at the time, you know, just sort of the darkness was caving in. It's like, right, something has to give here. And that's when I decided to call home and essentially come out. And then immediately then it was just night and day, complete switch, you know. And yeah, that's probably three, coming up 4 years now, I'd say, now.
Right.
And then at that stage, like, I was out of football a good while now. Just going back to the football, it was sort of, I couldn't really play to my full potential just because I was going to football. I was there, but I wasn't there. It was just in the back of my mind, so I wasn't really focused. I wasn't taking nothing in. I wasn't enjoying the training. I wasn't enjoying what we were doing. And essentially then, like, it shows if you're not turning up for yourself on the pitch, you're not going to get starting seniors. You're not going to get chances compared to the other lads, you know. And back then, I didn't know that was what was happening. And I just thought, okay, maybe I'm just a bad footballer, you know, during that time. But looking back now, I was like, no, I'm actually a good footballer. I just wasn't focused. I wasn't there. But now I'm just there to play football.
Did that really matter to you? The consequences for your quality of football?
I guess I'll think back now. I guess it's just coming back from a footballing family, like, and seeing how far people can actually go within the career. Like, could you go on to play for Tyrone like my brother did? I just would never know. Could I have broken into the senior team at an earlier age and made a real impact compared to just never knowing, I guess, you know, compared to now where I've got my starting senior jersey. Whereas back then, I guess I just done it and just didn't see the other side of it, you know?
Yeah.
But back then, I was just like, no, get me out right now sort of thing, you know?
It's really interesting that you say, you know, you go to Liverpool, you go to the United States, and the greatest fear, it seems, is not coming out at all. It's actually somebody at home might find out.
This is it, you know, it's sort of that, the judgment of others and what someone else is going to think, you know? So I couldn't really accept it myself. Over the years, I guess I was more accepting of it, and just like I got to the point, why should I have to come out, you know? And just let people find out their own way. But then again, you're just thinking there's that fear of judgment. And again, it just came back to I'm going to lose my friends, my family, and everything I built over the years, sort of thing, you know, if I do come out. And it's, I guess, because I didn't see anyone else in that public eye, especially within football, who has went through it and come out the other end, I guess, you know, like I didn't really have anyone to relate to or talk to. Compared to now, where I think there's a lot more like social media like awareness, and even myself now coming on this and talking about it, I think it does matter having someone who has done it, you know?
100%. And we'll get into the idea of role models and how important they are, particularly in the context of Gaelic games at the moment. But when you go to Liverpool and you go back playing Gaelic football in Liverpool, do you think to yourself, geez, I wish I went further afield from here? This is like me going right back into what I do at home, and part of me wants to cut the umbilical cord with Gaelic games because it represents Ahiarn and it represents Tyrone, which is something I'm just not overly comfortable with at the moment.
Yeah, this is it. You know, then, like, once I went to Liverpool, I didn't think I'd be playing with the Gaelic team again. I thought this was it, you know. And at the time, I was coming back in the summertime as well to play for Ahiarn. It was sort of that there, up in the air point. It's like, okay, am I enjoying it or not, or will I give it up? But same with anything, you go to a new city, try and find new friends, and where else are you going to make friends rather than the football team, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And then go to the Irish pubs again, that's sort of your core set of friends, you know? So it just happened to be the Gaelic football team.
When you say that you were burnt out in that room, the dark room with the little ray of light in Asia in 2022, was that just burnt out from being on the road for a year or however long you were gone for, or was there actually a sense where your mind was a little bit burnt out from the turmoil of constantly thinking, geez, when am I going to make that phone call to my parents?
I think it was a mixture of everything,
right.
Especially getting away and you meet people from all walks of life around the world, you know, and just hearing their stories and experiences, and especially other people who are gay and how openly and proud they were.
Were you telling your travelling mates that you still hadn't come out to your parents?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then obviously they knew I was gay, but back home you're sort of not out, you know, so it's one of them things where it's like, okay.
They must have been great conversations to have. That must have pushed you as well.
100%. And for me, seeing how good their life is and how comfortable they are and how just happy they were, I guess, you know. Whereas for me, it was sort of, okay, I'm like 50% now, 50% not happy, you know, just because, okay, I have this life, but it's almost like a double life then once I go back to Ireland then after traveling, you know, if I don't come out and just go back into that place where I spent 7-8 months running from, you know. But seeing those stories, it sort of gave me, I guess, a bit of courage in myself just to sort of think about it and really look at it from a different perspective and see what could go right if I do come out, rather than everything that could go wrong. And I guess just that room then was just my thinking time. I like to think that was my rock bottom per se, you know. And then, yeah, just like I said, everything changed then once I did come out, and it was just so normalized.
Were you nervous making that phone call?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, it was FaceTime to my mum, and it was only on their phone calls where you're like, you keep it going and going. It's like, how's the weather? How's the dog keeping? Stuff like that there. And it sort of gets to the point where mum picks up, right, something's wrong here or something's happened, you know? And then eventually Ezra gives something else to tell you. And that was it, you know? And same with dad. It was just like, right, how's the weather? When you're coming home? It was so normalised and just, your typical Irish response. It was just like, right, fair play.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it, you know?
Were you hoping for something more momentous?
I don't even know. Like, you're probably just thinking, geez, there probably is going to be something more celebrating, I guess. But then at the same time, like, all right, this was built up for years and years for nothing, you know? And I guess my older brother as well, Sean, he's gay and he came out many years ago, but I think his experience was a bit different.
Okay.
And he moved away from him as well, moved to Belfast, and he wasn't really involved in the football team as much as his later years. So I think seeing how different experience he just got a bit more tougher, I guess, you know. I think that was on playing in my mind as well. And for me, I was thinking, how am I going to come out to my parents again, go through this year again sort of thing, you know. So just thought, again, just the negative of it rather than the positive sides, you know.
Your brother's experience, have you spoken to him much about that in terms of...
After he came out and came back from Ireland, you know, sort of thing, you know, and it was just like... Yeah, you've nothing really to worry about, you know. It's just more so, oh, I wish you had told me earlier, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
One of those other things. And the same with everyone else, my friends and everyone else who I'm close with. How I just went through life normal and then behind closed doors going through this here, you know. They just wish, like, they could have been there a bit more or just been aware of it, you know.
The list of things that were going through your mind as an 18-year-old, that's quite a lot, you know. I presume it's very, very difficult to pinpoint what was the dominant emotion or the dominant fear at that point. Mm-hmm. But if you had to put a hierarchy on it, what was the thing that really terrified you in your late teens?
I guess you just said there is the fear of it all, I guess, you know. And during that time as well, I did move schools as well for my A-levels. So going from a small school in Castledeirg to, what's like 20 people in my year, going to the CBS Grammar School in Omagh with 300 in my year, and it's all boys' school as well. Even stuff like that there and making new friendships and everything and trying to break into that football team as well and going through everything as well and getting dropped and whatnot, you're sort of thinking, what's going on, you know? Is my life falling apart, I guess, you know? And I guess come down to the football as well, that was just another thing, another knockback for me in the sense where I'm not a good footballer. That was the only thing going through my mind, you know? And then it was sort of them things, okay, if I don't have football, what else do I have now in a sense? Because it's all I known growing up. But then it got to the point then where it's like, okay, I don't need the football, I'm going to go off and all these feelings I'm feeling are going to disappear as well. You know, so a lot of fear, a lot of paranoia, a lot of what's going to go wrong, I guess, you know. But back then you just don't see anything else, I guess.
It's fascinating. So, like, obviously a huge part of your identity was couched in Kevin Penrose, the footballer.
Mm-hmm.
And then being a Gaelic footballer, whatever, 10 years ago, is couched in the idea of a very macho, heteronormative society.
Yeah, 100%. And like even going into that new school, for example, once you're trying to make friends and everything, or try and make a football team, or try and make a senior team, you're sort of trying to make a good impression, I guess, you know? And a lot of the time you would have seen lads saying certain things just to be seen as, okay, I'm the best in the room, or I'm the big lad per se, you know? But it's not even necessarily their fault either. Like, they didn't know any difference. You know, and no one was going to call them out. The coaches didn't call them out. Their players didn't call them out. So no one just knew any different, you know. And at the time, it was like, okay, I can either partake in this or stand up and say something against it. And then that's draw more attention to it, I guess, you know. If I say...
So you partook in it? Or you...
I'd say not partook, but probably didn't say nothing. Just say it silent, I guess, you know.
See, that's the thing. So I'd imagine there's other people who would have... partaking in it, which would be totally understandable to try and fit in. And if it, you know, takes you 10 years to come out after, from that vantage point, you do wonder how many people have yet to come out from that. Like,
this
people who did partake, people who maybe aren't as headstrong as you, or maybe didn't have the opportunities to travel or to actually understand that removing themselves from that place geographically would actually allow them to be a true version of themselves. And that's the real fear here, is that somebody has still kept their true selves inside for 10 years or longer from a similar background.
Mm-hmm, 100%. And like, even back to that age, I just wasn't confident back then to speak up, you know? And I guess just if I did speak up, then I would be seen as gay, you know, the gay lad and the thing, just because I'm standing up for something that's essentially wrong, you know. And I guess that's a lot of people's fears even today, to call people out. Even if you're straight or gay or whatever is your sexuality, people's first thoughts, oh, this guy must be gay if he's saying something about this, you know. So I guess for me back then, it was just better to say nothing and maybe just laugh it off, you know. But on the inside, it's like, okay, this, I feel offended by that, you know. Compared to today, I remember when I came back to football, we had, I think we had a footballer wedding maybe a couple of months after I came back, and the footballer table, we were all sat together around the table, and the crack was good and whatnot, and then one of the lads said something homophobic, I guess, you know, not realising I was sat beside him. It wasn't directed at me, it was just sort of thrown around the group of lads, you know. So I thought, right, now is a chance where I'm going to play with, not play with him, but a little bit, but have the crack and sort of call him out in a healthy way to let him know that it's not okay to use that terminology, I guess, you know, and no matter setting it is, you know. And yeah, went down, no problems. It's like, all right, no bother, apologies, didn't realise.
Right.
And they're just more mindful of it then, I guess, you know. And I guess back then, just no one was doing that, so no one knew any better, and it's not their fault.
Is that an immaturity thing, or is that a societal thing at that point?
I think it's societal at this point, right. You know, and sort of, well, back then, it's probably maturity as well, I guess, you know. They just think gay, for example. They probably don't even know the true meaning of it, I guess, you know. They probably heard someone else say it on TV or around family or whatever it is, you know, and just assume, okay, I'm going to use this in conversation to sort of get ahead. But I guess now, compared to today, like, it's so, you see so much more about it. Like, there's more awareness about the LGBTQ community now and phrases you can use, terminology. Like, I guess people are just more tuned in now compared to back then. And even with social media, for example, you just didn't know about it back then. Like, it wasn't as evident. You couldn't just go on your phone and see articles on Instagram or TikTok or videos about it. It was just essentially the newspaper, I guess, you know, and it wasn't highlighting anything, you know, so I guess it just wasn't shown.
As an aside, the rest of your trip in Asia must have been unbelievable when you have that weight off your shoulders.
Oh yeah, 100%. It was great, you know, and that was probably, once it came out, it was probably like a month or 2 months into it, you know, so I had the rest of the time to sort of enjoy it and really take it in, just be myself, essentially, you know. And yeah, a lot of good memories out there.
When it comes to coming home then, do you fall back in love a little bit with Aherne, with the Gaelic Games, with Ireland in general, now that you're out to your parents? Mm-hmm.
100%. Like, I think once I was away as Ireland as a whole, like, I didn't really see a lot of Ireland. I guess that once, every time I went away, I didn't see it for what it is. I didn't realise we had mountains and beaches and everything on our back doorstep, you know. So that was one thing, is like, right, I really want to see Ireland. And in terms of football, I think once I came back, I wasn't going back to football. I sort of had accepted the fact that, okay, football's done now. I have no real urge to go back to it.
Right.
You know, just sort of thought, am I going to go back into that environment? What's made me feel that way, I guess, you know, and just sort of parted ways with it.
So what changed?
I guess just conversation with the lads out of just around coffees and around their houses and stuff they got there. You know, it was just sort of, the conversation kept coming up. Right, you're going to come back. The lads are fine with you being out and all that dare crack. There's no issue or nothing they got there. And it just kept coming up and up, you know, again. And yeah, just sort of like, right, the year had finished. We're starting up again in January, February time. New management were coming in and everything as well. So it was a good time to start fresh and whatnot. And yeah, I just went back and there was no problem at all. You do be nervous going into it, that first sort of night of training or whatnot. But yeah, everyone was 100%.
So the first time you walk back into training, that's your first time walking into a GAA change room in Aherne.
Mm-hmm.
In how long?
At that time, it probably 2 or 3 years, because it was in and out of it, you know, during COVID as well. We had like a short season, you know, and yeah, it's probably a couple of years in the way, you know.
So that's a big moment going back into that dressing room as well. That's another barrier that you're...
100%. Like, I thought once I booked that one way ticket to Asia, I was like, right, this is it now. I don't know when I'll come back to Ireland, that there sort of way, you know. But funny enough, whenever you go traveling, you sort of sit with your thoughts. It's like, right, no, I need to go back to Ireland, just sort of, now it feels right.
Yeah.
And with football and everything as well, it was one of those things, more thought about it, and the lads were fine. I sort of owed it to myself then to really push it and just be there to play football now for all those years I missed, and for the younger version of Kevin who missed out on all those opportunities, I guess. And yeah, haven't looked back since.
Am I right in saying that Ronan McNamee was one of those people who was constantly badgering you to get you back in?
Yeah.
That must have been a big deal.
It was, like, especially have someone, he was a throne at the time, you know, to have someone like a county player come to you and just be like, right, everything's all right. We grew up together playing alongside each other in school teams and just club football. And then I'd be very good friends with his wife as well. So it wouldn't be anything else I'd be doing at their house normally anyway, you know, just having the crack and catching up. So I'd always come back to football then, essentially, and it was just like, right, you're coming back. And yeah, eventually then did go back, you know. But yeah, having him a sort of an ally, I guess, in a sense, just to show that he has your back, and it's really something, you know. So it is.
Do you feel that all around the dressing room?
Oh yeah, 100% now, yeah. Like, it's probably funny to say, like, back then, compared to back then, it's probably my safest space now, walking back into that environment, because it is, I don't know, you can just sense, feel safe, I guess. And there's a sense of community and unity within us and the lads, you know, and no matter what the problem is, we all have each other's backs on and off the pitch, you know, so it's funny how it comes back around to be a place I hated.
Yeah.
To be the place I probably love most now, you know.
What about on the pitch when it comes to opponents and opposition teams?
100%. You know, again, with I'd done the GAA Social podcast, that was probably last year. I was already out at the stage playing football like normally, but after that their podcast, like, was sort of one of them things, right, I'm coming out on this podcast to the masses now.
Yeah.
I know that everyone of all age groups are going to hear this podcast, and we did go into it thinking there might be negatives. And I remember we were playing Loughmacquarie in a friendly, and just walking across the pitch to the change room, I was like, right, are people staring at me? You just had that nervous feeling in your stomach again. That's the first time walking into that change room, essentially, once people find something out. And yeah, it's the same thing. Like, everyone's 100% saying, heard the podcast, congratulations, shake my hand, well done, sort of thing, you know. And then you just get on and play football, I guess, you know. So it's been, yeah, I haven't had any negative experiences yet.
That's fantastic.
You know, which is great, you know.
I think we sometimes undervalue how broad the mind of the Gaelic Games person can be. Mm-hmm. It just needs a little bit of a nudge in the right direction. It needs a role model. It needs to just be shown the way a little bit at times. It's it's not as traditionalist as we sometimes think it is.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, I think a lot of the time I was thinking, oh, it's just the way the GAA is formed and brought up, you know, and just traditional values. But I guess outside of that, they're like, there's gay people all walks of life outside of the GAA as well, you know, and to be shown that there's representation in that now, and the things that you see today, there's more workshops, more events, and more awareness brought around being gay within the GAA. Like, their slogan now is, like, it's a place for everyone, I guess. So it's only right that that should be highlighted compared to years ago, where I guess it was just the awareness and access to information. Like, years ago, I didn't know any gay Gaelic footballer, I guess, you know, at that time, so I didn't really know. I just thought it was just me against the GAA, essentially, you know, and no one could help me. But now it's, you see it a lot more, and even for myself coming out, the amount of messages that I would be getting from lads who are in my position still or who have been through it, you know, you do see it's more common than people think. So
yeah, it's still, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it still feels that there's a bit to go in terms of gay role models within inter-county Gaelic games or like at the top level of the game. It feels like David Goff is still very much flying the flag.
Yeah.
On his own to a degree at the top sort of visibility level when big days in Croke Park, for example. Why do you think that's the case?
I'm not sure. You know, like, great that they still do it. Like, I met him maybe a month ago. We had a Cork Pride panel talk down Cork for Pride Week, and we had a lot of conversations about it. And it's one of those things, like, once you're in it, it's fine, great, but it's, does the story get old that you keep trying to repeat yourself over and over before there's more referees out there, or there's more players coming out and sharing their stories, you know? It's just sort of, you don't want to sound repetitive, you don't want to sound boring, but it's good to keep the conversation going because you never know who it could relate to, I guess, in a sense. And even going into the top players like Mark Shields, for example, who've been out to Armagh team in the panel for a long time, and just hearing how they accommodated him and just made him feel so welcome, I guess, you know? And that's over the grasp of 10 years of his career. You know, and it just goes to show, if one club can do it or one county team can do it, how can that not be transferred to everywhere else in Ireland, I guess, you know? And even for my own club, like, I've had no problems whatsoever. And why can't other clubs, not even going out of the way to make a big deal out of it, just but be more aware of your terminology and like training your coaches just to be, even see the signs of, okay, this person seems really off, is everything all right? Even just doing a check on them just to see, you know, even just to have a talk, you know, just little things that got there and it sort of, it adds up in the long run, rather than having me, for example, feeling so alone and no one to talk to. But I guess it's just one of them things no one wants to, I guess it's the attention part of it as well. No one wants the attention of it. I guess with me being social media for so many years now and having the following, it was sort of the next gradual step for me because I show so much of my life online anyway. So for me not to show that side of it, I guess wouldn't feel right with myself. But I guess for someone who is in the back end of Ireland and rural community who doesn't have that chance or feel comfortable, they probably just don't want this added attention on top of everything else they're going through, you know? But again, then if they see someone in the spotlight, I guess, sharing their story, hopefully they can find confidence and solace in that and help them with their own journey through it.
I'm sure part of it is the other aspect of being an intercounty footballer where you're told by your manager to keep the head down, don't say anything to the press, don't say anything to the media, and, you know, revealing too much about yourself, whether it's your what you do for a living, what you do day to day, is kind of is discouraged from actually being pushed out there. So then sexuality on top of that, I'd imagine, could be something that's restrained almost, certainly in a public setting. So maybe it is something that's happening behind closed doors in dressing rooms, and intercounty footballers are actually having these conversations, and it's all well and good, and maybe it's actually just kept out of the public eye.
This is it, you know, like it just depends if you're comfortable with it or not. And essentially at the end of the day, mostly if it's a manager, he's there to manage his team of footballers to win something at the end of the day, you know, so I think that's their first priority, I guess. And everything else in terms of like the media and personal life, whatever it may be, of course, it's good talking about playing behind closed doors, but if they're coming off the back of a All-Ireland semi-final and then the Monday morning it's a front page of such and such said this about this, is just sort of not needed during that time, I guess, you know.
The only thing is I guess the possibilities of a role model in intercounty football is huge at the moment in terms of what that might do for young lads who are struggling with their own sexuality, struggling with the idea of coming out, seeing a top intercounty footballer actually leading the way on that. I think it's still probably a breakthrough that we've yet to have, and I think could be massively beneficial.
100%. Like, it still is that. If he's out there, I guess, but again, it comes down to the fears and even if they want the attention or not. And I guess for me, the stuff I went through for a county player, that's going to be 100 times worse, you know, how they're feeling. Even just Croke Park, for example, if you're walking on for that pitch, are you opening yourself up to verbal abuse from other players, from supporters even? Like you see it in other sports like soccer, like homophobic chants and stuff like that. Like, it just seems to be much on a much grander, bigger scale.
I'd like to think that if there was a homophobic chant in Croke Park from the stands in particular, it would be front page news, very rightly dealt with in that moment. It would be an extraordinary thing to hear. And I think maybe I'm overly optimistic in thinking that. But
You know, it's just that there, I guess the fear, I think that's what it comes down to of, okay, do I want to put myself on that pedestal or step up to be this role model? Or do I just want to get on with it and play the football, I guess, you know? So it is, you're stuck between a rock and hard place, you know.
The other thing as well is male allies, and like even when we were speaking to David Goff about this, he's found it difficult for people to actually just come out and kind of declare their allyship, essentially. Mm-hmm. Very, very simple thing. I know there are exceptions to this, like Conor Myler, for example, is one exception that comes to mind, but this is probably something that goes beyond Gaelic Games and goes into society in general, that male allyship is just not in a good place. Straight men don't always want to be associated with things like pride. I don't know for what reason that might be. You could speculate on a number of different fronts there, but that probably requires a bit of work at this point, and I think that's something that Gaelic Games could benefit from.
100%. Like, for example, we had the GPA Pride Brunch this summer, and Conor Miley was hosting it with myself and Mark Shields, and we're looking out in the room, and majority of the room, 95% of it was women.
Right.
You know, and we had a conversation afterwards about it, trying to get, okay, more straight males into the rooms that get there. But it's one of the things, do they have the fear as well? Okay, if I'm going to these brunches or being seen to be going to this here, is my sexuality going to be questions, right. I guess, you know. And for Conor himself, like, he's gone through it, like, having his sexuality questioned, I guess, time and time again for what he does for rights within women's sports as well and everything else. Like, is his motives there, I guess, you know.
And is he just, like, water off a duck's back sort of thing, or is that something that actually gets to him?
I don't think it gets to him as much, you know. Like, once you step into those sort of topics and areas, you're going to receive backlash either way, you know. And I guess for him, like, he's a credit to himself for how far he's just brought, opened the conversation, I guess, you know. And, yeah, he's doing an amazing job with this. But even he was saying, with his sexuality being questioned as well, because he's hosting a pride brunch, things like that there, it's just sort of, I guess, just the fear as a society, never mind the GAA thing. But yeah, I think there is a lot of room and improvement for more male allies to come into the equation, you know, which would be great.
Yeah.
You know?
How do we get from that point where it's not 5% straight males in the room when it comes to allies? What can be done?
Oh, I've been asking this question. I don't know why, you know, like, even for myself, like, my friends, like, they're all great support and everything, you know, and it's just getting them down. Like, I've had a few of them down for nights out, even in the George, for example, like, they're happy to do out there, crack, you know, so it's, there is a openness and willingness to go to events and stuff like that, you know, but again, for the masses, it's, I don't know what's going to make it happen.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully over time, like many of these things, bit by bit, the situation and the picture begins to change a little bit. Kevin, it's been great spending some time in your company.
Thank you. Really
enjoyable chat. I'm sure plenty of people listening to this will know exactly how to get you and have been long-time followers of you. But for people who have yet to hop on your Instagram page, for example, what can they expect? What are the next sort of plans with your own work?
So my own work now, it's all adventure-based. It was a bit more Pride, getting over Pride Month, talking about my story, events and stuff like that, you know, but now it's more into the adventure and travel-y aspect of it again, you know, trying to find that good balance between both of them so they see what I'm up to, you know.
Yeah.
Never shy to share my story, still talk about it, coming out and again getting the message from lads all across the country and ones who've moved away from home and who are still at home struggling. I'm glad to see that my page can be some sort of comfort for them, you know, and having the messages, I guess that's a good thing. You can have that direct contact to share experiences, you know, and give some advice. So yeah, it's a good mixture of everything on my page, I feel.
Any other travel plans once the championship is done?
Not at the minute. Okay. I might just sleep for a while maybe, yeah. Because I'm getting too used to that M50 up and down every week, you know. So yeah, I'd say the feet up will be needed.
Well, good luck against Moy in a couple of weeks. No doubt that'll be a ferocious old contest. Uh-huh. You've been listening to Kevin Penrose, Gaelic football player with Athy Éireann. You can check him out on social media as well. Kevin, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00, proud partner of Croke Park Stadium and proud partner of the GAA.